Chapter 9. Confronting Count Fosco. 16. Walter Hartwright's narrative continued.
I was still thinking about what Pesca had told me when I walked back from his apartment that night. As I came closer to home, an idea started to form in my mind. When I got home, I wrote this letter to Pesca. The man you saw at the opera is a member of the Brotherhood and has betrayed the cause. I am sure of this. His name is Fosco and he lives at 5 Forest Road. Find him and look at his arm. The scar is there. By the time you read this, I will be dead. Please get revenge for my death. I signed it and put it in an envelope. On the envelope I wrote, Open this letter at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning unless you hear from me before. Please send a signed note back saying that you have received this letter. I then gave it to a messenger and waited. An hour later, the messenger returned with Pesca's note. As I was leaving our house, Marion touched my arm.
Where are you going?
It's Fosco, I said. He'll probably leave England tonight. I must act immediately. I got a cab and went to Forest Road. It was midnight. As I walked up to the Count's door, I noticed the blonde man with the scar on his face from the opera. He looked at me and walked on down the road. I rang the doorbell. The servant showed me into the drawing room where the Count was packing his bags.
Sit down, Mr. Hartwright. I'm in a hurry.
I know, I replied.
What do you know?
I know you're leaving England and I know why. The Count went quickly and quietly to the door and locked it.
I don't believe you,
he said. Roll up the left sleeve of your shirt, I said, and you'll see the reason. Count Fosco put his hand into the desk and took out a gun.
Perhaps I should kill you,
he said. Read this first, I replied, handing him the note from Pesca. The Count read the note and immediately knew that I had won.
What do you want?
He asked. I want a full confession, written and signed, of your conspiracy with Sir Percival Glyde against Laura Fairley, I said. And I want proof of your story so that everyone knows the truth at last.
I agree,
said the Count.
Now I'll tell you what I want. When I've given you the confession and the proof you ask for, the Countess and I will leave this house without any interference from you.
I agreed. The Count began to write. He wrote quickly, with great intensity and pleasure. When he had finished, he cried,
Done, Mr. Hartwright.
He gave me his confession and a letter from Sir Percival to him, dated 26th of July, 1850. The letter said, Lady Glyde will arrive in London this evening. This was the proof I needed. The death certificate said that Lady Glyde had died on the 25th of July, and here was a letter from Sir Percival proving that she was still alive on the 26th of July. At 8 o'clock, the messenger went to Pesca's house. He returned at 8:30 with the unopened letter. The Count burnt the letter, and half an hour later, he and the Countess were gone.
17. Count Fosco's narrative. My story begins with this simple fact. Percival and I needed money. Immense necessity. Universal want. We discovered this common problem when we met in Europe after Percival's marriage. We discussed it as we travelled to England. There, at Blackwater Park, I met the magnificent creature who is inscribed on my heart as Marion. At 60, I adored that woman with the volcanic passion of an 18-year-old. Marion herself has described our time at Blackwater Park with perfect accuracy. My narrative must therefore begin with Marion's terrible illness. At that time, all my energy was directed at finding Anne Catherick. The fact that Anne had escaped from the asylum first gave me the idea for the conspiracy. I said to Percival, We'll simply exchange their identities. Lady Glyde and Anne will exchange names, places, and destinies. Anne is dying. When she dies as Lady Glyde, our money problems will be solved, and your secret will be safe. Anne spoke to your wife by the lake. One day she'll come back to the lake, but this time I'll be there. On my third day by the lake, I met Anne. I told her that Lady Glyde had sent me. I said that Lady Glyde had gone to London and wanted Anne to go there too to meet her. Anne believed me. I told her to meet me in the village the next day. Anne, my wife, and I then drove to London. We wrote to the servants at Forest Road to tell them that Lady Glyde was coming to visit. When we arrived, Anne was immediately suspicious. Her anxiety caused her to become very ill indeed, and the next day she died. This was a great shock to me. The plan depended on Anne staying alive until the real Lady Glyde left Blackwater Park. I met Lady Glyde at the station with a carriage, but it was not my carriage. It was the carriage of the doctor from the asylum. He never for a moment doubted that she was Anne Catherick. He did not listen to what she said. Why should he listen to a mad woman? I told him that Anne was even more confused than before. She now believed she was Lady Glyde. That, in short, was our great conspiracy. So simple, so brilliant, so interesting. Foscoll. 18. Conclusion by Walter Hartwright.
Over the year of my investigation, I had asked the people involved to provide the narratives that have been presented here. We took the narratives and Sir Percival's letter to Mr. Curl's office. After having read them all, Mr. Curl said that Laura's identity was now proved. The next day we went to Limeridge House. Mr. Curl confirmed to Mr. Frederick Fairley that Laura was in fact his niece and not Anne Catherick. The people who had been at the funeral were all invited to come and see that Laura, Lady Glyde, was in fact alive and well. I copied down the words on the gravestone before it was removed. A few weeks later, I read in the newspaper that the Count had been murdered in Paris. The murderer had not been caught, but witnesses described him as a blond man with a scar on his cheek. The newspaper said that the murderer was believed to be a member of the Brotherhood. He had left a note on the Count's body with the single word traditore, the Italian word for traitor, written on it. Sir Percival and the Count had spent all Laura's money, so we could not get it back. But the following year Mr. Frederick Fairley died, so Limeridge House was Laura's. Marion, Laura and I lived there happily. The following year our son was born, and he is now the heir of Limeridge House.